head around. It's time to break it down. Make a brand new sound. I'm here to demystify.
Step into the Parenting Cipher, your friendly space where we break down special education terms, spotlight vital resources, and support you in championing your child's success at home and school. It's like catching up with an old friend who truly gets it. Each episode is tailored to uplift and strengthen your entire family. We also feature insightful experts to shed light on the essential services your child can benefit from. Join our growing community. Please subscribe, rate, and review. Your input shapes our journey. Let's navigate, learn, and grow together. Self-confidence, the key, let's unlock it up. Thank you so much for being on the show, which is so funny. So what's funny, I'm going to tell everybody a funny story. I wanted to be a parenting coach, right? And I was like, do they have certificates for that? Like, do they have programs for that? You know, so one of the things I like to do is research, right? That's my whole platform, is like sharing resources. So I found your institute. And for everyone who doesn't know, I want to make sure I pronounce your name right. It's Kiva. Yep. And the institute is called Jai Institute.
Yes.
So came across Jai Institute. And I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome, right? This is so awesome, right? And then I was like, price point, not so sure. I'm going to come back. And I always have it, like, pinned. So when I'm ready, aww, I can go. So when it came through, I was like, oh, my goodness, yes. It's most definitely a yes to come on the show for various reasons. What hit me the most was, for everyone who doesn't know, Kiva has a book out. And it is called The Peaceful Parenting Revolution, Changing the World by Changing How We Parent. One of the things that hit me the most is, you know, in your book, you stated in many ways, we need to mourn the childhood we didn't have to be the parent for our children that we wish we had. And one of the things that I always tell parents is sometimes the child in us is leading. The child in us is leading, even though we're whole adults out in this world.
I mean, define whole adult, because that's a whole conversation we can have, Jeannie.
A whole conversation. But the child in us who is saying, my parent did it. What was good enough for me? It's good enough for my kid.
I'm fine.
Right? I'm fine. Right. That sometimes we are not the best version of ourselves. We are a pseudo version of our parents with the added part of sometimes the things that we say we hated the most about our childhood is the thing that we take out of our children's childhood because we don't understand why it's important. So I just wanted you to come on and talk about that a little bit more, especially when you have parents who have, first of all, you know, Black community. So we all have our trauma, but with the added piece of when we're dealing with special needs, and what I find is that in our community, a lot of us have undiagnosed special needs. I'm one of those people. I still haven't gotten tested, but let's just say I have math challenges. So when I grew up, if I decided on a career and I found I had math in it, No.
Not for me.
It's not for me. But for me, because I know that is my weakness, I divert my kids. I tell them, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it. I'll get you a tutor. I'll get you a tutor. Because I want to be honest with my kids what I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What did you say? You said, define a whole parent. But also define, we're growing up too.
Oh my gosh. I really believe that there's such an opportunity when we kind of get humble, right? And say, well, wait a second. Maybe I entered parenting without yet being a fully formed adult, right? Like maybe there are some blind spots that I have. Maybe I have some defense mechanisms or communication styles, beliefs, ways of thinking, identity constructs, right? Who am I? I am not good at math. Well, that's an identity construct. True, false, I don't know. It's who you decided that you are at some point. And that children give us this amazing gift. I don't know about you, but there's no other humans on the planet that I would work so hard to be a better person for than my own kids.
Yes.
And so when we accept that, like, I don't need to be perfect. I have some growth to do. I'm going to learn. Then actually what our kids become are our growth partners. And we realize that the best way to grow them up is to grow ourselves up. Parenting is adult work. And what I see in the world is that we are asking children to do the very hard work of maturing, gaining wisdom, and taking responsibility and being independent when we ourselves aren't quite there yet. And so my passion is about the human rights of children, right? Like, they get to be children. Mm-hmm. And that we get to stop asking them to behave like adult brains in child bodies. And maybe we turn this adult brain in our adult body into an actual adult. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's when I like to tell people, one, be aware that we're still growing, right? Just like you said. However, our kids are growing with us. They're on our journey. I always tell people, it's a journey. And no matter whatever is going on in your life, your child's on that journey with you. Something that we sometimes are not aware of consciously. So I have some fears, right? Because my parents had journeys, but I, as a kid, I don't have context. I just remember the feeling. I remember, so when it comes to credit, oh my God, oh, I'm so scared. Not because something actually happened to me. Something that happened to my parent. So one of the things that I work on with my kids is they're on this journey with me anyway. So how can I empower them and give them a little bit of context so they won't create another narrative? Yeah. So no, I definitely understand. I became a better parent, and I'm going to also disclaim the idea of better parent. It's just something that we say. I become a better person when I'm mindful of what I don't know, and when things don't work out, how can I fix it, and how can I support my kid with alleviating anything or narrative like that they would pair around with it.
I mean, these things, you know, when we tell our children who they are, they believe us. So if we tell our children that they're irresponsible, that they're disorganized, that they're bad, they're naughty, they're pain, they're rude, they're, you know, undisciplined, they're defiant, they believe us.
Yes.
And that is the lens through which they will see the world for the rest of their lives until maybe, you know, I joke with my kids, like, I got to give you something to go to therapy about it for you. Come on. You know, but that we're at least aware that their inner narrative is largely informed by their primary caregiver, whether that's a parent or someone else. And that as such, we have a tremendous amount of responsibility to, yes, parent them, right? Teach them. Discipline means to teach. It doesn't mean to hit, smack, whop, punish, put in timeouts. It literally means to teach. Discipline them into becoming responsible, independent, integrous, values-oriented human beings who hopefully make the world a little better for their being here. And that we do that best by lifting them up and allowing them to experience life with our support and our guidance, but not because of our lens that we got from our parents.
That, oh my goodness, during COVID, you know, we're home by ourselves thinking, right? Looking at the world. one of the things I realized is I had a lens that I inherited from my parent, who inherited from their parent, and that I was actually limiting my children's lens. The world is changing, but I was still using, oh my God, a century old lens.
You want to hear the craziest study? Mm-hmm. There was a study done, don't ask me the details, maybe about 10, 15 years ago. And they had little mice in a cage where the floor would be electrified. Mm-hmm. And so when they walked to a certain area of the cage, their little feet would get zapped. This is awful, but this was the study. And 3 generations of mice later, the little baby mice were still afraid of the floor. And so these generational traumas exist in our DNA. They are literally passed down through genetic code. And so when we do the work of healing, right, when we do the work of overcoming generational trauma, generational patterns of abuse or emotional wounding, we are not only healing ourselves and our children, but our children's children's children.
So with that being
so said, cool.
For anyone out there wondering, well, how do I start? How do I start to heal the trauma or change the lens? Like, what advice do you give?
So there's a couple of steps, and they're simple, but they're not easy.
Right.
So the first step is acknowledgement. Right? Like, really, you know, there is a way where we defend the indefensible when it was our parents, you know, and, you know, we have so many amazing Black coaches in our community. This is a conversation that they are having together and widely through their social media platforms. But what I hear from our coaches of color is that there is kind of this I'm fine mentality. Right, that my parent, that what, you know, I was spanked because it was what was good for me. Messages like, this hurts me more than it hurts you. I'm doing this for your own good. It's essentially gaslighting, right? I'm hurting you, but you are causing me to cause you harm. That's gaslighting. And so there is an acknowledgement that we can hold 2 truths at the same time. Our parents loved us. Mm-hmm. They did what they thought was best. They had our best interests in mind, and it caused harm. And so we can love them, we can honor them, we can respect them, but that doesn't mean we need to continue to perpetuate cycles of violence, trauma, and emotional wounding. So that's number one, like, maybe there's a different way, and maybe there are pieces of me that get to forgive.
Right.
And move on, right? I call it dropping the bag of rocks, right? Like, we're all dragging this bag of rocks behind us of our ancestors, our lineage, our past. Well, there's also a lot of good that came from those things. You know, my own story is that a pretty abusive stepmother watched my half-brother being very intensely physically punished as a child. She wasn't my mom, right? So I had this vantage of perspective. My mom wasn't putting Tabasco in my mouth. Right. and I didn't recognize it as abuse until I was well into my 30s. And that was like oh my God, we were abused children. Oh my God, we're abused. Well, I've come to see that had that not happened, right? Had my baby brother and I not gone through that path, mm-hmm. not had that experience, there would be no Jai Institute for parenting.
Yeah.
Like, there would, my passion for treating children with humanity would not have been ignited had I not had that experience. So that's what we call a cohesive narrative, mm-hmm. right? Yes, these things happened to me. There were negative outcomes. And also, I am resilient. I am independent. I am angry. And I've used that anger to, I hope, change a lot of lives. Actually, I know, right? And that's humbling to say. But thank goodness that happened to us.
Yeah, I like to say it's not about me, right? It's not about me. Anything that's happening, I even tell my kids that, right? Because, you know, we talk about their growth. We talk about the situations that we find ourselves in. And I have my moments where I'm like in a hole, oh my God, and maybe I should have it. And I have to come back out of that narrative and ask myself, well, what was in place for you to make these decisions? But I always tell myself, it's not about me. If something's happening with my son in IEP meetings and I'm feeling like, you know, you're trying to make me a bad parent, what you're doing is you're hitting those pain points that as a culture, you know, are going to get a certain reaction, and you're trying to think you're going to shame me. And I feel, and I'm mm-hmm. feeling some kind of way when I leave mm-hmm. the meeting, I'm like, okay, center yourself. This is not right. This moment is not about you. You did this mm-hmm. thing for your son because this story is not about you, because there's another parent out there who's going through the same thing.
Absolutely.
And they don't have that lens. And I wanted to go back to when you're talking about acknowledgement. One of the things that as a Black parent, I would always caution everybody to really think about is the things that how our parents raised us is also coming from a lens of keeping us safe.
Yeah.
And I wanna, like my aunt, my grandmother would always say, I'm gonna get you before they get you. They being the law, you know, they being people who are out to hurt them or incarcerate them. And to understand that the thinking behind it wasn't to cause physical pain. However, you're also coming from a traumatic history where it's like, I want to hit you before someone else hits you. To understand that, make peace with it, release it, and understand that that peace is not the peace that is going to make you a good parent and make your child survive. There are other pieces that we can create, you know, like
I said. Yeah, I mean, protection, right? As parents, that's our number one job, to keep our children safe. I think it's interesting to think about ways, right? Like when you think about a child in an adverse situation, right, in a challenging environment, in something that could cause them serious harm, what are the skills and tools that will actually keep that child
safe?
That's
what I'm learning.
Right? Being able to use their head, which means they need to stay in a calm nervous system state, because when we're escalated, all of the energy in our brain goes to our survival mechanism. They can't think.
Just like us. Just like us.
You're just going to react all over the place, right? So nervous system regulation, the ability to use our voice, right? How much are we teaching children that their voice does not matter when we ask them to be quiet or not have an opinion or not share when they're angry?
Right.
Preserving their voice keeps them safe. And here's the number one, you know, I have two teenagers now. The thing that I'm going to cry, because my kiddos were in a car accident last week. They are fine.
Okay.
But it was one of those car accidents where like you saw the car and you're like,
you made it. I've been in those.
You walked out of that car.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I believe saves teenagers' lives is the trust that they have with us to run toward us when something goes wrong and not away from us. And so when children are young and we're hitting them and shaming them and belittling them and demeaning them and putting them in timeouts and taking their toys away, this does not preserve trust. It teaches them that they need to hide themselves really from us, which is the last thing that we need them to do when they're in trouble. We need them to run toward. And so it's just a reframing, right? Like we're still keeping them safe and do not want to send them into the world ill-equipped to handle all of the awfulness that is out there. But in re-examining how we do that.
Oh no, look, I'm smiling because I had a moment like that with my son, where, you know, my children has autism and he has anxiety, and he was so worried about this job because of where it's located. And I'm letting him work through it, you know, and I'm like, well, hey, you know, let's think about all the ways we are safe, right? And I'm like, I said, I'll start. And he's like, and I give, and then his sister, and he's like, I got nothing. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm digging, but I'm letting him work through it. He says to me, you know what, Mom? I'm going to try it out. If I don't feel safe, I'm going to lean into my business. Like, if I don't feel safe. And I said, I can respect that. And he got, you know, first day, he comes back, gets in the car, and he's telling me all the things that they learned. And I was in awe, and unlike yourself, I was thinking, oh my God, like, he talks to me. Like, he's telling me, you know, he's talking to me about what he learned and the perspectives. And one of the things my mom always says is, she says, I don't understand why when you were a teenager, you accomplished so many things, but you never really talked about it, and you never really shared it. And, you know, as a, you know, now we're both adults. And she was like, well, why is that? And I said, yeah, I don't know. I was like, I don't know if it was because you're working, dad is working, you don't have time for it. I have absolutely no idea, but I never did. Like, you know, when I graduated high school, I was on the stage because I was president of the student council, and they didn't know. When they got there, my aunt Nick almost fell off of the balcony yelling my name because she was so excited. But it's something I didn't do. So when my son was sitting there telling me about his day, right, I was like, oh my God, this is something that I was able to nurture. Nothing doesn't have to be broken or anything, but he's able to talk to me about what he's learned and what he's excited about. And one thing with children with anxiety, I like to say, you know, to spend the dream, right? The worries, well, you know. And I said to him yesterday, I said, you know, I have anxiety. I said, and one way that my therapist told me to deal with my anxiety was to say to me, what's the worst case scenario? What if it's the worst case scenario? So, you know, I hit him with the, well, what if? And he's like, well, if it's the worst case, then I guess, you know, I might have to have surgery on my foot again. I said, okay, so then what? What does that look like? And then he actually started getting lighter. He was like, well, I don't think it's that serious because it's like a flesh. So they probably just have to do a little incision. Like, and it got him to his appointment where we found out both of us forgot the part where the doctor said they didn't put any hardware in the foot. So it was like he was going so all over the place, and I was with him. But one of the biggest things I learned as a parent, because I have other kids who have anxiety, and I will always tell my daughter, it's okay. It's all right. It'll be okay. It's not that big of a deal. And I will never forget the moment I read that the worst thing you could do for a parent, a person, not even just a child with anxiety, is to brush them off. It isolates them.
Well, it spins them up, right? Because it's like, hear me, see me, feel me, get into my world. You know, one of the things that, you know, as parent coaches, we really work with parents, right? We're parent coaches, not child coaches. Right. For children, whether it's anxiety that's diagnosed or, you know, the 3 a.m. freak out that the blue Lego is on top of the red Lego and they really need that red Lego on top of the blue Lego right now. Empathy and compassion allow us to get into our child's world and see that that is real for them. So when we brush it off, we're like, oh my God, you're waking me up because of the Legos? What's wrong with you? You terrible human. I can't believe you did this. There's no reception of their reality.
Yep.
Right? So we're just like, oh, okay. I hear you. That does sound intense.
Yeah.
Now there's a receptacle for their feelings, their worldview, their reality, and they're good.
Anymore. One of the things that I learned, it's not because I'm technically always busy, right? And when I'm a parent, I would always say, yeah, in a minute. But my children have autism. You always say a minute, but it's never a minute. I had to learn to stop saying a minute to say exactly.
You're like, I'm on 4 minutes and 32 seconds, so.
How much time? But one of the things that I learned is to stop. When they come in, how do they feel when they come in to talk to me and I say, you know, give me a minute. I'm busy. I don't have time. And because my children, because my youngest has autism, you know, the social cues. So it's like, he gets hit by an idea and he's like, he'll breeze in, and he starts a conversation like, you have been talking about this forever. And I would, sometimes, at first I would cut him off, but now I don't. What I do is, if I'm on my phone, I turn my phone down, and I look at him, and I listen, and I say, well, you know what, Xavier? I don't have a point of reference for this conversation, so can you explain to me what this dinosaur is, or what that is? And then he's like, oh, yeah, Mom. So, you know, he goes into it, and I ask questions. He's like, you're an adult. You don't know this? And I said, you know what, Xavier? When I was a kid, that really wasn't my thing. And what happened is I'm connecting with him more, and he asked me questions. So he'll say to me, when you were younger, first of all, you know, social cues, so he could be real rough sometimes. I mean, Mom, you old. So did they have that in your time? Did they have that in your time? And I'm kind of like, I could be in my feelings, but I know he, you know, he,
just saying it like he sees it. I love it.
And he'll say, you know, what's your favorite thing? One of the most important moments I had with my kids was I had lost myself as a parent for a while. Mm-hmm. And I put my kids through therapy. And so I would like to say sometimes, depending on the therapy, it could turn a light on. And I remember my son saying, because he could talk, but he wouldn't talk to people. He wasn't connecting with people. And I remember one day we were in the car. We spent a lot of time in the car going to therapies. And he said, what are you interested in, Mom? And I said, I don't know. He said, well, let's think about it. I see you reading. Do you like to read? What kind of books do you like to read? You know, Mom, do you like to play video games? Because I like to play video games. And he was like, I'm going to find the thing for you. And it's that moment where I felt seen as a parent, but also realizing, how do they see me? As a parent, how we treat ourselves, how we love ourselves, teaches our kids how to treat themselves and how to love themselves. So, you know, that's part of like, it's a journey, but it's the part of where, like you said, he's 15. So to see, you know, him get in the car, like one of the things a lot of parents complain about is, my teenagers talk to me, and I'm kind of like, my dad, you know, hey, Mom, I have difficulty making friends. Like, when I'm sitting with my friends, if we're talking about things I'm interested in, but other than that, he said, I just feel like I'm sitting to the side. Is there a way for you to help me? To create a space where your child says can be vulnerable with you because you're vulnerable with them. I've learned to tell my kids I don't know. Tell me more. You know, tell me more about it, because their interests are high level. High level. So I used to act like I knew everything. And then I felt like my son is a moment where he was tricking me, Kiva. He was tricking me. So he would start asking questions, and I would like know the surface was, and then he'd start diving in, and then I would make stuff up, and he would be like, well, that can't possibly be true, because when the moon rises here and the tides come in and da 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 da, and I would get quiet, and I'm like, if you know the answer, why you ask me? So now
that is adorable.
I learned to be vulnerable. But you know, we're talking about this moment where we're creating this foundation for our children to talk to us, piggybacking on the idea of peaceful parenting, right? And I just want to take a moment for you to explain to people, because in this world, conscious parenting,
gentle parenting, this parenting, I know, it's all the parenting.
All the parenting. What is peaceful parenting?
So, I think the biggest... Okay, so I'm gonna try to not get on my soapbox. Hold on, let me just like move it over. Okay, so peaceful parenting, I think sometimes it's best to describe it by saying what it's not. So it's not permissive parenting. That's, I think, one of the biggest misunderstandings or myths, is that by being a peaceful parent, we're just throwing our hands up. Whatever you say goes. We're going to do whatever you want to make sure your feelings are never, ever hurt. You don't just experience any discomfort of any kind. And we are going to, you know, keep wiping your tush until you're 26. That's not peaceful parenting. It is not permissive. We are still parenting. We are still teaching. We still deploy consequences in terms of teaching behavior, but the consequences that we use are either natural or logical instead of what I would call a contrived consequence, right? So a contrived consequence has nothing to do with whatever the breach of the rule is, right? You didn't clean your room, so you need to sit in timeout. Those two things are not connected to each other. My child is not going to learn to clean their room by sitting on a step. So logical, natural, right? You don't show up with your shoes to the sports practice, you don't get a play. Right. Natural consequence. Okay, so it's not permissive. It is not perfect. I should bring my children in here. They will happily tell you how imperfect I am. It's about humanity, right? So I'm a human. You're a human. I'm going to have bad days. I'm going to become psycho lunatic mom from time to time. You're going to become a defiant teenager or a tantruming two-year-old or whatever. And we're still going to love each other. Right. And we're going to work through it. And we're going to figure out solutions. So it's not perfect parenting. And then obviously it's not punitive parenting. We are not using coercive tools of manipulation of any kind to what I would say is a, I can't think of the word that I want. Children are human beings too, right? They have rights. They have the right to have feelings. They have the right to make decisions. They have a right to have opinions. And when you look at traditional parenting, it basically said to children, you do not have those rights. If you're upset, I'm going to get mad. If you're going to disagree with me, you're a bad child. And we teach these little beings to either be the loudest voice in the room, right? Because we're demonstrating that the most powerful person gets their needs met, or be a people pleaser, because the way I get my needs met is by kowtowing to authority. I don't know about you, but I'm not interested. So that's what peaceful parenting
is. So let's for a minute. So coercive parenting, right?
Yeah.
Explain a little bit more. So I know what when you say I see you see me smiling. So I have older kids. They're my stepkids I raised, and I have my biological children. First of all, I want everyone to pay attention. I always tell people, don't have kids in their 20s. It is the most transformational period for you, because you're trying to create a foundation, and you're also steeped in all the ways that things aren't going right for you. And now I have these little people, and they're going to be better than me. Okay. You're very controlling.
Your brain isn't even done growing until you're 25 or 26 years old. I mean, just full disclosure, you're still a kid too.
Still a kid. And then I have my other in my 30s. So with that being said, when you say coercive parenting, I want you to explain it, because when you said it, I immediately flashed back. So I have flashback to my 20s when I remember telling someone, like, I have the power. What is it? I have the power to revoke. It was something like that. And people were like, what does that mean? I was like, see, you know what? I find what my kids love. And so I've never been in a penal. I never believe in spankings, right?
Yeah.
So my thing was, I'm going to find what you love. So then when you don't do what I want you to do, I'm going to take it. Right, I'm gonna take it from you, and then you'll do what I want you to do, so that you'll do it. And in my 20s, it was like, oh, perfect. In my 30s, I look back and I was like, dang, that's kind of messed up. that's kind of messed up, you know, a little bit. Well, and that's why I was like, tell us more about coercive.
Yeah, I mean, also have compassion. You know, I tried those things too. It's what culture tells us that we should do as parents. I mean, it's like the norms. So, you know, we get lots of grace. coercion is interesting to look at, right? Just as a concept, right? To coerce, to manipulate another person for our needs. It's pervasive, ubiquitous. Lots of people do it in relationship, right? There's codependency. There's all sorts of things that are enmeshed in this idea of coercion. So coercion is the idea that we have power over another human being. And many parents see their children in this way, that they are the authority, they have power over this child and get to manipulate their choices, feelings, and behavior using power. Like, let's not call a spade a spade. The challenge with that is then we are conditioning children to be compliant in the face of authority. We're literally teaching them that the way to get their needs met, to get their favorite toy back, is to be compliant. Well, that has a whole consequence in itself. And it creates, right, like we were just talking about trust and connection and cooperation. Like if you're using manipulative tactics to coerce another human being into being who you want them to be, doing what you want them to do, saying what you want them to say, all that goes out the window. Trust is eroded. Relationship is, cut. Demands, like, rob us from intimacy. So here's the best part, is that children want to be in relationship with us. They want to feel accepted, known, seen, loved unconditionally. They want to be cooperative. When we step into a new frame of, let me teach this child, right? So, okay, I don't know, what's an example? I have teenagers, right? So the kitchen is always a mess. I'm like, I could pick up the trash that's on the counter and put it in the trash can and be angry and resentful. And then when they come downstairs, yell at them. Or I could be like, hey, come on downstairs. And they go downstairs. And I'm like, oh, let me teach. Look, this is trash. This is called a trash can. And like, oh my God, mom, seriously. I know, it's mind blowing, isn't it? Now there's this amazing thing that happens when you pick up the trash and you put it in the trash can. Do you want to try it? And then, I'm joking and I'm being silly, but I'm teaching. Right. I was just listening to my son call his own doctor to get his own paperwork to go to college next year. I didn't call. Yeah. I don't do it for them. I'm teaching them. Yesterday he called the insurance company. He needs to change his auto insurance, right? Going to college. I'm not doing it. That's parenting.
Yeah, it's teaching them how to self-advocate. It's teaching them the why. Like, that's the one thing I love about humans is the why. Even when it's trying, someone, the environment or whatever, is trying to stifle that why. It's why, right? And what I work with my kids on is why and how does it benefit you, right? Mm-hmm. The bathroom, So. Yeah. I don't pay my kids for chores, right?
I really think that we have been living for generations with a very big lie. And the very big lie is that children need to experience pain, suffering, shaming, punishment in order to learn.
To learn and to get the results you want. When you can really just talk to them.
Just teach them.
My son,
I know.
My son, I said, listen.
Just talk to them.
I'm like, we're in this house together, right? We're in this house together. I'm one person. I can't clean everything. So, I want you to do chores. What do you want to do? I'm not the most organized person. I'm Aquarius. I'm going to be like, I have these great ideas, And then, you kind of cut away. My kids are not that way. So my son was, Mom, I need you to put a board. You put a board up, and then we can make sure that we do it. I need to know what day it is. I need you to create this calendar, right? So I started to do that. But what I like to do is I consider something I call a buy-in. I don't call it a conversion. Why do you want to do this thing? Well, my son just started in ninth grade. What I knew was one of the things for me when I grew was a high school student was I knew I wanted to get grades. I wanted to get 3.0. But I had no relationship with it. I was getting good grades because I wanted the praise from my parents. Right. It wasn't because I understood that it correlated to a scholarship, right? The why of it. So with my kids, I give them the why of it. And so I was like, okay, I'll pay you for A's, because like the real world, they pay you for A's. But one of my brightest moments last year was this. I want them to go to college. You know, sometimes we can live vicariously through my children. I kind of give them options, and I'm really kind of like loose with it, because what I don't want to do is, a lot of times with parents, you're living them through them. You're putting them all the things, and then they get to a certain age and they pivot.
There's a whole chapter on that in the Peaceful Parenting.
Everyone check it out, because then your feelings are hurt. Your feelings are hurt. But with my son, I said, well, yeah, we talk about college all the time, but he needs to see what he wants. We went on a tour, and one of my proudest moments, and he's 15, and everyone's asking why, but this is part of what I do. I love that part for kids. And we go on the tour, and I have my concerns, but I never tell my kids my concerns. And as the college admissions counselor's talking, we're on the tour, and he says, he didn't talk about my major. But I need him to tell me specific for my major. And he said, can you help me? Can you like draft a letter to send? Sure. Then he said, okay. So he said that I need rigorous. He said, you know, I have autism. So that shows my resilience. But academic rigor, he said, yeah, mom, you know, at first you had to pay me to do honors because I wanted him to try it. He said, yes. So I have to keep doing my honors classes. And then I had to go talk. So he was like owning it. And I was here for it, and I was so like, oh my god, yes. And he was like, he was planning, and he was like, but the way that he said to me was like, okay, so that's it, we don't need to look at any other schools, because I'm going there,
I'm going here. I'm good.
And one thing I always tell people, because I also talk to parents about getting their kids in private school, and I say, never let your fears become your child's fears. And that's right. For my kids, we would go to private school. We were trying for years. We had one school. My daughter came out. She said, I'm going here. And I said, oh, okay. She said, what do I need? She was 7. What do I need? I said, well, you need good grades. She said, I got that. I said, well, you need to have good recommendations. I got that. The teachers love me. And out of all the applications we had ever done, that's where she gets accepted. And the important part I'm trying to share with parents is the child drives their own destiny to a lot of ways of when they show up, how they show up, and what they want. So whenever my kids say, I want that, my job is to make sure you have what you need to get that.
Yeah.
And if we come to this place where there's a struggle on their end, how can I support you? But I tell my kids, I'm like, well, you didn't get into school because, you know, the school wants, for my son right now, it's like the school wants to see that you can be more of an independent learner. He said, what's that? I said, well, they're saying that, you know, you're not a self-starter. What that mean? I said, well, when you're...
Says who? Right, show me the evidence.
Who said it? I'm like, when you give it your assignment, are you waiting for your teacher to tell you what to do after they give you instructions? Mm-hmm. Or are you doing it by yourself? And he said, well, they always tell me what to do. And this is the setting he's in. So he's been like this for years. So this is what he's waiting for. I said, well, the new school wants you to do it. Start doing it yourself. He said, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, not coddling them from the reality. And
I mean,
not coddling from the reality of like, these are the things, if you want this, this is how you're going to get it. And without worrying about, of course, you're going to like stream it down. So sometimes when people say stuff about your child, do you think it's going to hurt their feelings, or is it your feelings are hurt as a parent? Because you think they're saying you are dropping the ball.
You're being judged. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about, I mean, think about it. Like, if we can really get honest with ourselves and think about our lives and what, you know, the work that we chose to do, the schools that we chose to go to, maybe even who we married or who had children with, and we thought about how life-changing it would be for us if we made our decisions from internal motivation mm-hmm. versus external validation, right? Like, I don't know about you, Jeannie, but I made most of my decisions well into my 40s based on what other people would think and how other people would perceive me. And that caused a lot of bad things.
A lot of bad.
Right? So if we're showing our kids that they get to have intrinsic motivation, they can follow their passions, they get to make things happen, they get to move things forward, they get to decide the path of their life, like, maybe they end up a little better than we did. And I think for most parents, that's all we want,
that's all we want.
Like, just a little better. Just
a little better. And that's that. That's the thing that I love the most about your platform, you know, supporting parents, is there's so many pieces, but like you said, the main piece is that we're humans, and acknowledging that, and acknowledging we get to be different. And yeah. just because it worked for us, we're in a new generation where we get to be better people for our kids to be better people. And that's like one of the things that I am most pleased with myself. I check it with my kids' behavior therapist. So conversations, right, about what's going on with them to help them better. And I was telling him about the conversation with my son, and I said, "Yeah, I'm going to give kudos to myself and pat myself on the
back." Oh, yeah.
We
have to celebrate ourselves. You know, I think as parents, it's easy to focus on the 15% or 20% of what's not going well. But there's a whole lot going great, and we get to like three cheers ourselves. You know, this is hard. Parenting is hard. And so celebrating those micro moments, whether it's your son talking to you in the car, or, you know, like let's victory, right? Do you know Jai? So Jai Institute, Jai means victory in the name of good in Hindi.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I just love Institute so much. I just did. just because I think as parents and as humans, we want the best for kids. So sometimes that's to my kids and I'm just like, oh, why do I hear myself so much? Right. Mm-hmm. but in a good way, because they have their own, you know, viewpoints. But to hear them say, well, you know, let me choose. Like, even if my son says, I'm asking him questions and I'm like, what do you want to do? So, I don't know. Do you think you want to cook? I don't know. I said, well, let's talk about what it is. Do you feel like you want to try it? Sure. I want them to be their choices versus it's something that I'm making them. And my son will call me out. I don't know. Like, you made me do that. I said, oh, we need to come back. Don't, because if I leave it, it'll be a narrative that he'll be an adult and my mom made me. And I don't want him to be like, my mom made me. I said, remember we talked about it and I asked you if you wanted to do. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, he said to me, so I'm going to ride my bike to school. And my whole soul was like, oh, no. And then he said, if you trust me.
Hmm.
Yeah. 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 And I said, oh.
Ooh. Okay.
So this is big, because this is, if I say no, it's like I don't trust him. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, baby, it's not about trusting you. I said, but you know what? This summer we'll work on putting, like we talked about previously, how can you support them? I said, we'll work on like, your grandfather rides the bike. He wants to ride his bike. I said, so your grandfather worked with you on, you know, the traffic, how to navigate traffic on a bike. And I said, if you give up the bus, you'll have to do this. And we really talked it out where it wasn't just for him, it was me.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, Keith.
Yeah, I mean, I think letting kids, you know, especially boys, frankly, they need risk-taking, right? Like, they need to climb the tree. They need to jump off the thing. And, you know, I've just always thought it was better for kids to have a broken arm than a broken spirit. And, you know, like, one of the hardest parts about this kind of parenting, right, parent-centric parenting, where we are really, like, more raising ourselves than we're raising our kids, is I think the hardest part and the part that people really struggle with is that more often than not, we're doing nothing over doing something, meaning that our kids need to sit in their pain, right? Like they need to, like if they don't do their homework and they get an F, that's their F.
They need to feel it.
They need to feel it. Their emotional process is the punishment, right? Like it is deeply uncomfortable to fail. It is deeply uncomfortable to not live up to your integrity, right? So as a mom sitting there, knowing that my child is in agony.
And not charging in.
I was joking. I think that the most powerful word in the Peaceful Parenting vocabulary book is... There's like 87 versions of oom. Right? But it's just do not fix it for them. Yeah. Do not protect them from it. You gotta just like sit on your hands and close your mouth and let them be.
Yep. You could give your suggestions, but after that, let them be. It is. Because with my son, we were talking about something. He's opening a business. And he said to me, I said to him, I was like, well, because he's an artist. I was like, well, you know, you need to create a description. I don't need to do that because other people have the same thing and they don't have it. I said, okay, well, I'm going to show you how to create it. And I said, and, you know, it's up to you. He comes back like 2 days later. Yeah, so, you know, apparently writing a description really helps people find you. I said, really? And it took all of me not to say, you know, everybody out there, you know what I'm about to say. I told you so. You didn't want to listen to me, but I did it. I said, okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, this is how we raise adults, is we let them practice while they're with us, doing hard things, having responsibility, living with the consequences of their decisions, supporting them to find the yes, what you were talking about. And then guess what? We get a grown-up instead of another, you know, child in a grown-up suit.
And an advocate. A self-advocate. Yeah. It's important. 100%. It's so, like I say, it's so important. And like you said, saying that, like holding your tongue. So my son had an issue with another child who has a different level of autism. So he doesn't understand, you know, personal space. He's asking the repetitive questions. And every day he would talk to me about it. Like, I'm like, can we not understand? Can we, you know, this is my conversation. He got in the car one day. He said, yeah. You know, so I talked to the administrator about him constantly talking to me. And I told him that I would want him to stop talking to me. And I said, internally, I was like, oh, is that a thing? And he said, they told him to stop and he stopped. And you can look at it different ways. For some parents, they would try to shame the child. Like, why would you do that? Like, have empathy. Right. But I didn't. I was in awe because that wasn't a solution for me. But we're about to wrap up. And it was such a joy talking to you. But I just want to close it with two things. Okay, everybody, you have to go get her book. It's not just written by her. It's also written by other parents. And that was one of the things I was like, oh, this is so great. Right. So it's not one person. It's different authors. It helps you become a better version of yourself and, you know, supports you with nurturing your child. And with that being said, Kiva, this is the Parenting Cipher. So I always ask my guests, do you have a favorite song? It doesn't have to be hip hop, even though it says that in my copy. A favorite song that motivates you as a parent, personally, that when you're down or you need to rev up, like this is, I'm going to conquer my day.
You're going to laugh so hard at this song. This is my favorite, like when it just feels like the world is coming down around me and I just want to like put my head under the pillow. There's a song by a band called The Decemberists. It's not hip hop. I think they're like indie folk. I don't know. But it's called Everything Is Awful.
Ooh.
And it goes, everything, 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 everything is awful. And I just jam out and it makes me smile. Does not matter what's going on. It is my favorite.
I like that song. I'm like, I don't even know this song, but I like the words. It's that part of.
We'll play it. You'll crack up. There's like this point. And then the I'm not a singer. And then the angels sing. And they're like, la, la, la.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah. So that's going to be on our playlist, just so you know. But I just want to tell you thank you so much. Everyone, please get the book. And it's not a hard read, you know, because sometimes you read books on parenting and you just like, sometimes you read books on parenting and it rebukes your soul. I remember I got a book about parenting and the first sentence said, you need to find time for yourself. And I was like, no.
Who wrote this?
Not a I can't parent. Do that. And I closed the book. I closed the book and I never picked it up again. Even though I started to learn and really lean into that idea. I still haven't opened it up. But with that being said, I started to read this book, and I'm gonna be honest with you, it was like a warm embrace. And made me feel valid and seen as a parent, as well as there's no such thing as perfection in humanity. So of course there's no perfection in parenting. You know?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. It was hard for me to write this book because I do not perceive myself a parenting expert. I will never tell anybody else how to raise their kids. I am a little bit of a grown-up expert, you know, like I really want all of us to have an easier time of parenting because our kids need us to support them in a new way. And so it was important to me that the book was love and was a transmission of compassion and empathy and awareness that I do not know anyone else's experience or circumstances. That's why I invited other coaches to collaborate with me, because I know nothing as well. But it hits me where I live to hear that it felt like a warm hug. That is that's the biggest compliment.
Oh, you're welcome. Like I said, I've read plenty of books. Okay, I've listened to the book Conscious Parenting and all this thing, and I never got a feeling like the one I got. And it could be that our thoughts are similar, you know, how I've been parenting and, you know, my thought process, but it was that part of you're not alone, you don't have to be perfect, and you're not failing. So I want everyone, all the parents out there to know, even in the moments where you feel like you're not showing up as your perfect self, you're not supposed to. And in the moments that you feel like someone is questioning being a parent, no one can question, just like no one can question who you are as an individual. They can't question who you're being a parent. Just keep showing up for yourself and your child. Be patient with yourself and your child. And just know that there are institutes like Jai Institute out there that if you really want, I need a parent coach, you know, check out Jai Institute. They have a diverse number of coaches, diversity in their coaching. So this is not a platform where you're thinking, not for us.
Who's this white lady telling me about parenting?
She has people, and even in her book, Conversations, like what one of the, we're going to close out, but I wanted to say this to everyone. Whenever I see the presentation of Black fathers, in her book, she has a Black father who writes,
Richard.
Right. Oh. So this book has us there and present in our stories. So this will not be an experience or a book that you read and you're sitting there and you're like, they can say that because they don't live my life. They don't know what I'm going through. Oh yes, in this book, yeah, they will be talking about your life and what you're going through. Mm-hmm. So check it out. Thank you so much, Eva. Thank you for tuning into The Parenting Cipher. Are you feeling inspired, excited? We're here for you every step of the way. If you found value in today's conversation, hit that subscribe button and drop us a glowing 5-star review. Together, we're growing an incredible community dedicated to understanding and support. For an extra boost, don't forget to check out the resources in the show notes. Remember, every day is a journey. Cherish each moment and be kind to yourself and your child. Until we meet again. Hey.